Yeah, those are the things we're working on here throughout the week, tonight and really throughout the week. Because technically, all these guys, I know you might hear some stuff on Twitter and all that stuff, and none of these guys can really be signed until they walk in the building.
Do you expect to have a regular size class ultimately?
We'll see how it shakes out. Yeah.
For these guys, how soon will they be back here?
They'll be back today, Sunday, the end of the week?
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast Friday live stream hangout. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan Size, publisher of NFL Draft on SI, the Yada Yada King. I didn't say it yesterday, saying it today. My co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, the Titans rookies. That includes their draft picks, the undrafted free agent signings, and some tryout players will be reporting to the facility for rookie minicamp, which begins today. Robert Saleh speaking to the media at 10:45. That is 13 minutes from right now. We'll see if it starts on time. Gonna play that press conference live on the show, react to what he has to say, preview rookie minicamp, talk through the UDFA class, and guys we think have a chance to make the roster. How's it going? You look like you want to say something.
Let's go. Made it live from New Zealand. 3:30 a.m. in the morning, says Chucky Chip. Wow, that's crazy. Like Graver said, rookie minicamp today. Rookies reported this morning. Robert Saleh is scheduled to speak in about 12 minutes. We'll be shocked if he's on time. But we are doing our first ever watch-along. We're gonna put up this audio here, the video of Robert Saleh, and we're going to react in real time as we listen to what he has to say. As the Titans rookies hit the practice field for the first time, UDFAs, we're going to talk UDFAs. We're probably going to do that after Robert Saleh speaks, because we don't want to get caught in the middle of that. Titans confirmed 11 UDFA signings. We got a lot to cover on today's show. Excited about it. Like we said, Titans confirmed 11 UDFA signings yesterday. Finally, we had 13 initial UDFAs reported via Twitter and social media sphere, if you will, but only 11 confirmed by the Titans. TBD on those other two. We're going to be monitoring. Are they there at minicamp? Is it just a hangup? Are they minicamp invites? Is there a holdup with their physicals that they haven't passed yet? Whatever it is, we are going to figure that out and get to the bottom of it. Will the FIFA World Cup have any impact? Good question on NFL training camp in June. I don't know, Flowers Powers, but I'll tell you what, it's going to have an impact on my recording schedule because I'm not missing any Portugal games, and Graver's going to have to live with that, or any Canada games. That's the real question you should be asking. What impact does the World Cup have on this show? A big one, if it's up to me.
Wally, $10 super chat. Oh my goodness gracious. Can't thank you guys enough for educating the Titans community. Will the real angry Justin please stand up? All right, I'm sorry.
Can you play the drop for Gary Soto? You don't got to talk, just hit the button.
Oh my god.
While I
gracious.
Do the talking. Gary Soto with maybe his best comment of the day. Best comment he's ever left, I think. With his daily $50 super chat tip, Gary Soto says, "My mom is going to be furious once she sees the credit card statement this month." You know when Will Ferrell is at the dinner table in Talladega Nights and he says he likes to pray to the baby Jesus version? He likes to picture little baby Jesus in the manger. I like to picture Gary Soto as a young child who has stolen his mom's credit card. I feel you on that. If you're not first, you're last. And Gary Soto is always first in our hearts. This is unbelievable, Gary. We thank you so much for your daily, daily generosity. And Graver, I think we might have to do a couple more super chats to get into here.
Yeah, let's get into them, baby.
Are we not hitting the drop for everyone? I can't remember.
Every single one? You want the drop? The people got mad at us. The people literally got mad at us for hitting it every single time.
But, well, you know what? I'm also people, gracious. And it makes me happy. So hit the damn thing as I shout out Rocky Top Titan X with the $4.99 tap, super chat tip. Which UDFA is your favorite? Who do you expect the most of? Rocky Top, we're going to answer this question later, if you don't mind, because we're going to cover the UDFAs extensively after the press conference. So if you're patient and can hang around, we're excited to get into that conversation. And fine, you don't have to hit it for the last one since the people don't like...
One person now, Marlon's going to be like, what the heck? I don't get the drop. Everyone else gets the drop. No, Marlon, you get the drop.
Oh my goodness. Hit the thing. Marlon Rando with the $9.99 Super Chat tip says 14 for Carnell's a trash number. Any predictions on some better wide receiver jersey numbers that might free up when the season starts? Someone talked about this on Twitter, didn't we, Graver?
Yeah, so here's my thing. Why is 14 a trash number? You guys don't think Amon-Ra St. Brown looks good running around catching the ball? How about this? How about Carnell Tate doesn't take a number that somebody else made awesome? How about he takes a number that you don't like 14, and he goes out there and puts up 1,500 yards and 13 touchdowns and makes 14 cool? Makes the kids in Nashville who signing up for football this season want to be number 14. That'd be cool. I mean, it does seem like Jim DK is not giving up the number, because we got the report that Wandale Robinson wanted it and he was like, nah, I'm good. Wandale Robinson just got a $70 million contract. So you'd think that if he wanted it badly enough to pay Shimmeray DK for it, he has more than enough funds. He's got more funds than Carnell Tate's rookie contract. Carnell Tate did say that he would pay money for that number. I just don't think DK's giving it up. So that's where I'm at. I don't think he's going to give it up. And I don't know what other numbers, like, who cares, man? It's 14 can be cool. Why wouldn't 14 be cool?
I you're right. I don't think 14 is that bad at all.
Flowers Powers with a massive super chat. Oh my goodness gracious. Why Canada when you can scout Mexico, a semifinal rival, Justin? I assume this is related
As you know, Flowers Powers, I think I am Canadian. I was born here in Toronto, but my parents immigrated here from Portugal. So growing up, I always was a diehard Portuguese soccer fan. I still am, obviously. I got to admit, I don't want to say I'm a bandwagon jumper. It was hard to care about Canada soccer when it was so awful. Like, it was so irrelevant most of my life. It got pretty good like 4 or 5 years ago. So it's been really exciting to get into, you know, the Canadian men's national team. We're hosting the World Cup this year, part hosting, of course, alongside yourself and the USA. So really, really excited. And Jabba Chunk asks me, where in Portugal, Melo? My parents immigrated here from the islands, from the Azores, from São Miguel, the biggest Portuguese island. Really small island, but it seems like all the Canadian Portuguese immigrants here are from that island. We all got on the same boat and came here at the exact same time. So I am Azorean, if you will. Nice. Fake Portuguese, according to some people.
Trevor with a good comment here about Tate's number. 14 is his draft position if you do round 1.4. Wait. And this was a very interesting point that I think is probably accurate. Was this Austin Stanley who said this? I'm not sure. Austin had a good... He had a reason why DK wasn't giving up the number, but Garrett Holcomb with this comment. I saw someone say 17 with DK might be stuck because of all the promo he was in for the new uniforms in 17.
Interesting.
Look, if they've already printed banners that they're planning on hanging around Nissan Stadium or new Nissan Stadium, like, that would be a lot of, like, here's the thing. When you change numbers in the NFL, first of all, you have to buy out the stock of the existing printed jerseys in the NFL shops and team stores and all that stuff.
Oh,
so
I didn't know that. That's
thousands and thousands of dollars. Now, usually if a player is giving up his number to somebody else, whoever's buying the number will pay for that restocking fee. They also are going to pay the player a fee. But this goes beyond that, I think. If there's all these promo materials out there already, it's not like the team's going to organize a new shoot with DK to shoot him in his new number and get those photos for banners and billboards and all those purposes. So this is a pretty good theory that I would buy.
Yeah, very interesting. What is going on with the Mexican Super Chat tips today? The Viva Mexico. They love us in Mexico. Alberto says, hey guys, never missed an episode since the Brawl Pod. Wow. I mean, Alberto is a serious Graver and Mello supporter, because we like to pretend we didn't do the Brawl Pod once upon a time. But yes, Gary, Mexico is most definitely in the house. Alberto, thank you so much for your long-lasting support. His first ever time watching live. That is crazy. We are so glad you are here and made the live, Alberto. Best Titans pod by far. He concludes his statement with, we concur. Maybe we're biased, but we concur.
Slightly biased. Stingray VFL. Oh my, keep it rolling. Gracious. And look, if anyone's annoyed by interrupting the flow of the show to shout out the Super Chats, first of all, take a chill pill. It's fine. Second of all, we're literally killing time right now as we wait for this press conference to begin. Like, we do have topics that we want to talk about, but we don't want to get interrupted, speaking of interrupted, by the presser. So we're waiting for Salah's presser to start. It's scheduled to start in 90 seconds. We'll see if it actually starts in 90 seconds. Stingray VFL says, DK jerseys already sold. Smart for him to keep 17. People will love 14 by the end of next season. That's what I'm saying. People will love 14.
I think it's a good number. I don't have the problem. I have a bigger problem with Keldrick Falcon 15 than I do Tate and 14.
Yeah. What other wide receivers currently wear number 14 in the NFL besides besides Amon-Ra St. Brown? Let's see. Chris Godwin. That's a good one. Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's pretty much the list. Unless you want to include Roman Wilson, Olamide Zaccheaus, Chase Claypool, or Tyler Johnson.
I got to answer this question because I can't help it. Dave asked me, Vertinha or Juan Neves? Dave, why not both? I'm partial to Vitinha because he played for Porto, but that Portuguese midfield of Vitinha, Juan Neves, and Bruno Fernandes is why I think Portugal could win the World Cup this summer. Hit the thing for Angry Fetus.
DK Metcalf, when he was in Seattle, wore 14.
Good
Michael
point.
Wilson in Arizona, I believe, wears 14. So there's a couple others. Oh my goodness gracious.
Angry Fetus with the $14 Super Chat tip for the Carnell Tate number. Blessings upon Carnell Tate, not drafting him in Dynasty to avoid jinxing him.
Oh.
Enjoy the vacation, Justin and Justin. Congratulations on your marriage, Graver. What kind words. For an angry fetus, he's awfully kind, wouldn't you say?
Thank you. Thank you so much. This is a good point here, too. Tate only wants 17 because he looks up to Devontae Adams, but he also has games similar to Pickens, so 14 works. George Pickens, number 14, obviously. Good call there, Joe Blacko. DK Metcalf was thrown in the comments. Yeah. Oh, Stephon Diggs. Forgot about that one. Yeah.
Yep.
Brian Daboll has experience with a number one wide receiver wearing number 14.
Hopefully Carnell Tate will make better off-field decisions than Stephon Diggs does.
Carnell Tate.
Love that right there.
Where are we at? This presser starting yet? No, but we got a fun ad on the... Wait, is this... Oh, the ad just went away. We missed the ad. Sorry, guys. We missed the ad that came up on the screen. Yeah, 14 is a solid number. Here's something we'll talk about as we wait for this press conference to begin. The Titans picked up Peter Skoronski's fifth-year option. That is notable, not for any real reason, because, I mean, obviously they were never going to not pick it up. Friday, today is the deadline to pick up fifth-year options for the 2020...
What do you mean? 2023 draft class, no?
2023 draft class.
Like, what's confusing you?
So the Titans do that, and I think that is a setup, an obvious setup, because for what will eventually be a lucrative extension for the fourth year, going into his fourth year guard. Remember, you pick up the fifth year option before the fourth season, so this locks Peter Skoronski and the Titans together for the next two seasons, gives them plenty of time to negotiate a long-term deal. Obviously, from the team perspective. Oh,
Robert Sala.
Here we go, everybody.
You guys can open right up.
Robert, just so eager are you to get these guys on the field and get a look at them from a football on the field sense, I guess?
It's always exciting to get them out here. New players. It's just there's a lot of excitement for sure.
Yes, you sound very excited, Robert.
The draft picks, to give background, when they're going through the draft process, especially the 30 visits, they've been doing a lot of traveling. So over the weekend with our draft picks, we're going to be doing more baseline checking with them. So they'll be with the weight room, the strength and conditioning coaches. They're meeting with all of us throughout the day. But as far as practice goes, they'll be with the strength and conditioning staff, creating a baseline to see where they're at.
Is this something that you've done before with your draft picks?
Yeah, I've call it a scar. I was on the staff that saw Dante Fowler tear his ACL on the first rep of rookie minicamp. And so I've just taken the philosophy. These guys have had a lot. They've had a lot of stress over the last month. Their bodies aren't ready for football. And so we're just trying to see where they're at so we can properly get them acclimated once they get here with the veterans.
Undrafted and tryout guys.
We're rolling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is
that a flaw in the system, the way it's set up, to where guys can't come right in and compete? You said they're not ready for football yet because they've been training for combine stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a flaw. You've got to compete in the moment, and you know, they're for all intents and purposes, they're competing to get drafted as high as they can. And once they get drafted, it's the organization's responsibility to go through their due diligence to make sure they're doing what's right for the player.
I like that approach.
And every team's different.
To take it slow.
And I'm not saying our way is the right way. It just, some teams will go 11 on 11 and throw all the rookies in there and see what they're at. But like I said, you can call it just scars and just trying to make sure that we do things the right way. This weekend's not going to make or break anything. And the second part to it also is we get so enamored with the draft picks that our eyes kind of get fixated on them and their movement. And there's about 40 or 50 other guys. I don't know the exact roster, but we really want to make sure that all our scouts, all our coaches, all of our attention is on these undrafted free agents and tryout guys, just to see if we can find one or two that can make this 90-man and compete.
How hard is it for these guys, I think it might be as many as 58, to shine in a way that not only you want them, but you want to cut somebody to make room for them?
It is, Paul. It's hard, man. And I can appreciate it. But I feel like every year one or two guys kind of shine and they make it to the 90-man roster. And I actually told him a story about Benson Maioa. Back when I was in Seattle, he was a tryout guy. We were the only rookie minicamp tryout that he had. And that was a world championship team that had one of the best defenses in the history of football. And he not only made the 90, but made the 53 and had a long 9-year career. So you never know. But it seems like one or two guys every year makes it to the 90.
What was appealing about this kid, Tyron Montgomery, late to football, an older prospect? What was appealing to bringing him in?
Again, it's our scouts do a lot of work on these guys. And, you know, obviously they feel like he's got the talent to be able to make it, and giving him an opportunity to try out and see where he's at.
What are the conversations you're having with these guys ahead of the next couple of days in terms of expectations, what you're looking for from them?
From all these guys, the reality is you know, from a coaching staff standpoint, we've put in the bare minimum. We're trying to allow these guys to play as fast as humanly possible where they're not thinking. And the expectation for them, just take your shot. You know, it's schematically, we're going to put them in a position where they're not thinking. They can just go play. You know, don't worry about the things that you don't have control over. Compete the best you can. And but at the end of the day, they've got 3 days of being an NFL player at the very least, and being a Tennessee Titan, and which I think is pretty freaking cool. And so hopefully it goes the way they're all hoping.
Pretty freaking cool, man.
Limited, but that interaction, the back and forth with Cam Ward and Carnell Tate, what do you think of that? How has it been?
Carnell Tate.
It has been minimal. I think it's we're excited to get him back here next week. It's not next week, but the week after. But they've all got a lot of work to do. You know, you got a new system, new coordinator, new position coaches. Cam, not even with the guys that have been here over the last year, from last year. You know, there's just a lot of work to be done, especially with any incoming rookie. And Carnell's got to go out. He's got to compete. He's got to prove that he belongs. He's got to prove that he deserves the ball. And it's going to start day one once he gets here.
What are the biggest benefits of getting that extra mini camp with you being one of the new head coaches that was hired, as far as getting to do this again in your second opportunity?
No, I think it's good. You know, like really just for the process of it all, you know, getting in and out of the huddle, calling plays, running plays.
Why do you think, Buck? What do you think is good about having more time to work with your players versus less?
Just got them acclimated to the way we're going to do things. And then to go back to phase two again, which was this past week, and reset and go back to the beginning again. And so it's just another time that they get to hear it. So hopefully by training camp, they've heard it four times rather than three. And so as many times as we can introduce the scheme to them and introduce the day one, two, three installs, the better for the players, so they can go fast.
What's your vision for Anthony Hill in the middle of the defense? I know Dave was telling us there's not much of a distinction in your scheme between Mike Samuel. Just where do you see him playing, and how does he fit?
We'll see how it all goes. You know, Cody's doing a really nice job, so is Sed. Moose has got something to say about it, Diabati, who we brought in. So, you know, for Anthony, it's just going in there, learning the system, competing every day and see where he's at. But thankfully,
Insightful.
We're in a position where he's got to go earn it, just like everybody else does. And the top two linebackers will play nickel, top three will play base.
Robert, how much time have you spent looking back at tape of last year's Titans and
what stood out to you, and how much, if anything, do you take from that?
That's a good question.
The extent of our film watching was really when we first got here, just to look at the personnel, to see what we have, and to see what we can, what translates to what we do defensively. And but other than that, schematically, there's nothing.
In terms of guys not being football ready, what are some maybe early indicators that you're looking for that show that maybe they are a few steps ahead than where you're expecting them to be?
It's really going to come down to meetings, you know, just to see, you know, our coaches did a really nice job putting together what we call voiceovers. So a lot of teach tapes that they can send out. And so our guys can watch and listen to the coach speaking through the tape. So there's a lot of material that they can access on their own. But really you're really just communicating with them. We'll get an idea of where they're at once they get here next week, and over the weekend, that's to be determined.
With a guy like Hill, who may eventually wear the green dot, like how do you go about monitoring, okay, I'm giving him this much, he's able to still play fast, but also trying to give him enough responsibility to eventually take that green dot?
Yeah, he's all these rookies are going to – it's like drinking from a fire hose, you know. So it's especially at the Mike linebacker spot where they're the quarterback of the defense. And so we're going to give him as much as he can handle and try to find that balance between too much versus too little.
Not really answering most of these questions.
Has a breaking point. And even Fred Warner, you know, I had to go through – I've told the story many times that his second year against Arizona – it was a Thursday night game, and I put so much on his plate, and to this day, probably the worst game he's ever played in his career. And I realized I did that to him because of what I did to him with regards to all the different things I was asking him to do. And so we'll learn Anthony over the course of the next couple of months. We'll learn Cody. We'll learn Moose. We'll learn Sed. We'll learn all of them. And whatever that balance is, we'll figure it out.
Some of the things you'll weigh and decide to have rookie camp this week compared to next week, pros and cons, and why maybe this week?
No, good one. So, again, personal philosophy. These guys have been on these 30 visits. They're not as conditioned as they need to be. Their working out has been sporadic. So, by being the first week, I think we get first dibs on all these all the guys that our scouts think highly of with regards to getting them in the rookie minicamp, because there's a competition to get them here. And two, for me, it's to get their clock started. You know, a lot of guys who have rookie minicamp, and my belief is that if it was next week, they would just wait till next week to start working out again. So for us, it's get them started a week earlier, get them moving a little bit sooner. Again, all in an effort to protect them once they get here and protect their bodies.
You guys didn't draft any defensive backs in the draft, and yet the numbers there were a little bit thin behind your starters that you signed and had here. What do you need to see from some of these guys you're bringing in here as DBs and tryouts that maybe they can contribute something?
It's wide open. You hit it. It's wide open. You know, the back end of the roster with regards to our corner position, when you're looking at the 3-4-5 spot, it is wide open, and it's going to be exciting to see it all develop. There's a couple of undrafted guys that we're excited about, and you know, and that doesn't close the door to possibly bringing in a couple of vets either. So we are excited about our starters. Don't sleep on Marcus. I think he's going to be a fun one to watch. But
wow.
But otherwise, you are right in terms of the depth of that back end. Needing to prove itself.
Experience with finding gems in the undrafted free agent pool.
Every year, man, I'm telling you, I just talked about Benson. Every year, one or two guys, whether it's offense or defense, kind of shines and they make it to the 90 and somehow they do something cool. And I mean, shoot, every year, I forgive me, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I promise you one or two from this camp are going to shine and make it under the 90.
Robert, Ben, and Paul.
Wow.
Robert, you mentioned, you know, Carnell needing to kind of build trust with Cam and whatnot. As far as the acclimation process with him, though, is it a kind of case where you're going to try to maybe move him around early, or do you want him to maybe master one receiver spot like X or Z before you have him try to dabble in other spots?
Well, that's part of the system in terms of
Carnell Tate.
base fundamental teaching starts in square one, where this is who you are, this is where you're going to align. But Dayball's system is designed to be able to move the players wherever he needs to move them, to be able to put us in advantageous situations. And so whether it's moving Ridley around, whether it's moving Wendell around, whether it's moving Ellick.
Ooh, he said Wendell, like you, Justin.
Place. Taj has a really good ability out of the backfield. So, you know, we're working on all that stuff, but eventually he's going to have to figure all that stuff out.
What's your understanding of what we did to warrant the restriction of our access that's been pretty much the same for 30 years?
There's a lot of construction outside. I'm
for 3 years running, it hasn't been a problem.
Yeah, but you're going to have to answer it. He's got the answer for that one.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Okay. I don't know.
What did Paul ask at the end there? Did he say?
He said, what have we done to deserve having a loss of access in the ways that we used to? Like, I guess they're not allowed to go as many. Are they not allowed in the locker room this year or something? I don't know. Some access has been restricted. And instead of saying, like, what's the reason for it? He said, what have we done?
Wow, that was something.
That was kind of was that a waste of time? I don't know. He did drop a nugget in there. A couple of people pointed out in the chat. He said cornerback spots 3, 4, and 5 are up for grabs. He didn't say, we'll see how many we keep. He didn't say, we might keep 5 or 6. He said 3, 4, and 5. So first of all, Josh Williams is probably looking at that like the, hello, I'm right here. I'm your number 3. Didn't you sign me for that purpose? He also shouted out Marcus Harris. He said Marcus Harris can be one to watch. He's gonna be a fun one to watch or something like that. That was a nugget I took away.
But he also said the number 3 spot's wide open. And I know you said Joshua Williams, but when I think 3, I kind of think the nickel. So I think Marcus Harris first, and that's interesting.
Yeah, and then I thought it was interesting this approach. He's gonna slow play these guys, and you can tell that. One of my favorite things about Saleh as a coach, I think, is that he takes his past experiences, assesses what went right, what went wrong, what he could have done better, and learns from them. And he brought it up multiple times in this press conference talking about past UDFAs he can only name one, I guess, but who made an impression on him as a guy like, I'm pretty confident somebody's going to shine out of the UDFA class. The Dante Fowler tearing his ACL on the first day, like, I want these guys to acclimate their bodies back into football shape before we exert them too hard. I like that. And then there was one other that now I just draw a blank on. But I like that he's like learning from his past. Oh, the Fred Warner, putting too much on Fred Warner on a Thursday night football game, and how he's going to use that to bring along his rookie Anthony Hill. Like using his past experiences to grow and get better as a coach and learn what he did wrong and what he did right. I think it's a cool thing, and I like this approach to rookie minicamp. It might mean we don't get as many fun reports about what's happening out there. I'll sacrifice that for the health of these young players.
Yeah, definitely. I love that he taking an experience from the early portion of his coaching career when he was a lower-level assistant and is learning from it and applying it as a head coach, right? Well, I saw one of my head coaches get one of his best rookies tear the ACL because we overworked him or exuded him or whatever it is. I'm not going to make that same mistake one day. I'm not losing, you know, Carnell Tate or Keldrick Falk during the first practice. A lot of people pointing out in the comments that he probably views nickel as separate. Yeah, that makes sense too. I get it because the way he's praising Marcus Harris maybe doesn't align with saying 3, 4, 5 are wide open, right? That might mean, like you said, the boundary corner depth. And Joshua Williams is not here on a super expensive contract, and he hasn't done enough in this league to just get that spot outright, in my opinion. Like, there should be competition there. And unfortunately, it's probably from UDFAs. I mean, I guess Micah Robinson might factor in there as well a little bit.
That's
I still think
Robinson's
got some inside-outside versatility, so it'll be interesting to see where he's primarily used.
Josh Williams has done more than anyone else on the roster to earn that number 3 role.
No one's ever really – they haven't really played in the NFL, but the point is they're definitely, you know, on the back end of that and probably have to going to have to leapfrog Josh Williams on the depth chart. But certainly, though, it's not the same as fighting for Cam Ward's quarterback spot, right? Like, there's certainly a universe out there where they can do that.
Yeah, totally. Glasgow Stud with a great comment. They have less access on the practice field now, apparently, penned in. So before they could kind of just roam free, there were bleachers out there. They could post up wherever they wanted, go down to this position group, get some videos of the receivers running the ladders or whatever, go to this position group, get the D linemen working the bags. I guess now they're in like, this is your media spot and you can watch practice from here. Good luck. And Robert Saleh's answer was, well, we got a lot of construction going on. Like, I wonder if that's really the reason or if they're using that reason as sort of an excuse. Justin, we missed a couple super chats. We got to go to break here. Before we go to break, we'll hit these super chats quickly, come back on the other side, and talk about which undrafted free agents we think have the best chance to make this team. Before we do that, though, we got two in a row. If this was a double click accident by Chucky Chip, thank you for double. You can take one of these back if you need to. I don't know how it works, but he wants to get some lore on the Brawl Pod. Let's save that for the end of the show. We'll come back to that. We can tell you some lore of the Brawl Pod. And we got one here from Kevin Davis here for the Tate of the Union address. Love that. Love the MCA. Keep up the great work, crushing it. Thank you very much, Kevin. Justin, if you have any final thoughts here before we go to break, I'll give you the chance now to say them and then we'll be right back.
Thank you so much for the generosity, both of you. Chucky wants you to hit the thing. He tipped. He said he's leaving the double tip. I think that deserves a drop. We're going to break, and we'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard. And BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. All right, welcome back, audio audience. Justin, we are transitioning the conversation now to the UDFA class. I'm quickly going to finish my point on Peter Skoronski that got cut off by Robert Saleh. All I was trying to say is they have time. They get an extra year, basically, to work out an extension. I don't think they need that time. I think he signs an extension before the season starts. I think Jeffrey Simmons does as well. Those feel like July/August news events that we will be covering in a few months. But just wanted to finish that point.
The interesting thing about Peter Skoronski that you didn't cover that I will mention, just like we talked about how like the Lions turned down Jack Campbell's 5th-year option because of how they designate positions. Well, the O-line gets designated as 1-2, which means offensive tackle salaries really drive up the price of 5th-year option for interior linemen. In fact, I can't remember who. It might have been Creed Humphrey. No, Creed Humphrey wasn't a first-round pick. I can't remember who it was, but there was like a really good interior blocker recently who had his 5th-year option declined for that exact reason. I think it says volumes about Peter Skoronski that the Titans are executing the option despite the fact that that price is getting pushed up by tackles and things of that nature. And by the way, it also says a lot about where they expect him to come in on the extension number. Because that 5th-year option, I think, is paying him, what, $21 million? That says to them, we know he's going to get paid higher than that when we give him the extension. So we might as well just, you know, hit the thing on the option and execute it. Boy, he's going to get paid a lot of money, but he's worth every penny. He's one of the best interior linemen in the NFL. It's a no-brainer. And again, I think it says the world about him that they executed it despite, you know, that being a $21 million option.
Yeah, and we saw that happen with Linderbaum.
And Dalen says it was Tyler Linderbaum whose option got declined. Pretty funny that happened to him, and now he's like the highest paid center in NFL history. But it's $23 million, right? And at Skoronski, it's at $21 million.
He's making $28 million. Or 27 or 28.
Oh, is Linderbaum at 27 or 28? That makes more sense. But you figure Skoronski is going to come in around, what do you think, 23 to 25 per year? That's what I'd guess.
27 for Linderbaum. And yeah, I agree with that as a projection there. Okay, Justin, the Titans added...
Gary just asked, if you missed it, Gary, 23 to 25 per million, we're guessing, on Skoronski's extension.
Okay, Justin, we're moving on to UDFAs. The Titans have added 11 undrafted free agents. Our math didn't quite math yesterday. That's okay. I don't know where we were wrong. I don't really care, frankly, because we have the number now. It's 11 guys. And quickly, I'm just going to run through the list, and then we're going to pick out a few that we think have the best chance to make the roster.
By the way, I wonder if our math wasn't off. Are you sure they're at 90? Maybe they left a spot or two for one of these tryouts.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't count. Good point, though, players. Right?
Like, maybe there's a spot for one of these. They're probably going to want to sign one of these tryouts.
Yeah, I mean, I do think our math was still off by one, but I don't know, actually. It's a good question. Maybe there's 89 on the roster. Maybe there's 90, and they haven't technically used the exemption they get for right. David Ebuka-Agoha. But, okay, the undrafted free agent class. There's a handful of linebackers, a handful of defensive backs, a couple of receivers, a couple of tackles. And that's the class. There's not, it's not position diverse, I guess. It's like they loaded up on positions maybe they feel where the depth is lacking, and they're hoping to find guys that can come in and actually contribute to this team. So, linebacker Shad Banks out of UTSA. Last season, 3 interceptions, 3 fumble recoveries, 7.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 2 pass breakups. Super productive player at University of Texas San Antonio, so not the biggest school or highest competition, but a program that has grown a lot over the last few years, and we've seen guys come out of there and become NFL-level players, even if they're not stars. Linebacker Sean Brown from NC State only played in 5 games last season because of injury, but still compiled 3.5 tackles for loss in those 5 games. And linebacker Manny Powell out of Purdue, 110 tackles, 12 tackles for loss, 5 sacks last season. That is super productive. I can't say I've watched any tape on Manny Powell, but the box score watcher in me, quite impressed. The receivers, they brought in 2. We talked about Tyron Montgomery earlier this week. He's a guy that I definitely have my eye on, just under 1 yard under 2,600 yards and 32 touchdowns in 26 games. Eye-popping numbers for a guy who didn't start playing football until he got to college. A lot of untapped potential there, you'd think. Had a great Senior Bowl. He's one that we definitely have our eye on. The other receiver is Hank Beattie out of Illinois, who 826 yards last season. We'll see if he has a chance to make the roster. It's a pretty crowded back end, so my hopes are not high. But who knows? Maybe he's better than Tyron Montgomery. We don't know. And in the secondary, we got a couple of safeties. One safety, Bishop Fitzgerald out of USC, a guy that many had a draftable grade on. 5 interceptions last season. Interception, like that number, that kind of stat is sticky. And by that, I mean it translates. Guys who get big interception numbers in college tend to find the ball well in the NFL also. So he's definitely a player to watch in a safety room that doesn't have a lot of depth behind the top 3 guys. And then 3 cornerbacks. Jaden Lucas from Clemson, big-time program. Latrell McCutcheon, who you reported, Justin, out of Houston. And Jalen McMurray, local guy out of the University of Tennessee. I feel like one of those guys probably makes the team. We'll talk about that in a second. Last 2 guys, tackle Rashid Miller out of Louisville and tackle Emil Wagner out of Notre Dame. We touched on both of those guys earlier this week. The swing tackle spot is one of the biggest glaring concerns remaining on this roster. And because of that openness in the depth there, I think one of these guys has a shot to make the team.
I agree. I don't know where you want me to start, but I will say that when I look at UDFAs, I try to look at positions that are weak on the roster, right? Because that's really what starts or creates the initial pathway to it. And I look at Bishop Fitzgerald, you know, who Dalen is shouting out here, definitely making this roster. He should have been drafted. We also gave him a lot of money for a UDFA. When I look at him, and good player at USC, good tape, ball production is really impressive. Like you said, 5 interceptions. I look at this depth at safety, and I don't know what they have behind Amani Hooker, Kevin Winston, and Tony Adams. You got to think they're keeping at least 4 safeties, maybe 5, right? Occasionally you keep a 5th. So Bishop Fitzgerald, they brought back they got Jarek Reed at safety, who they brought back. They brought back, was it Kendall Brooks maybe?
Yep.
They brought back Kendall Brooks as well. So there's a lot of competition and a lot of room for a UDFA to compete there at safety. So I think Bishop Fitzgerald, if I had to guess who has the best opportunity, I'd probably put him at number one, in all honesty, yeah. Just based on what I'm looking at safety. Dalen asked a good question to where I'm going to transition to now. Is Brendan Crenshaw Dixon pretty clearly the swing tackle? I would guess yes. Second-year UDFA, they were so high on last year that they kept him on the 53-man roster because they were so scared of losing him.
That's right.
To waiver claims. Who the other guy here is who? It's Austin Deculus?
He's a swing tackle right now, the pretty clear swing tackle right now by default. Like, he's not the pretty clear swing tackle right now because he's like gone out and played at the NFL level and shown that he can hang. It's like, there's nobody else in the room.
Yeah, like, I mean, I hate to, I'm going to play a little cliche. Like, I wonder if they see him to start camp behind Austin Deculus because Deculus has played tackle in this league for a number of years. But he's really not put anything on tape. I actually talked to a couple of Chargers guys about Austin Deculus, and they actually said to me, you know, he gets a lot of flack for how bad he is in pass protection, and he is, but he's quite good as a run blocker. Like, when they asked him to run block, he did it at a high level. They ran the ball behind him successfully. So It's Brendan Crenshaw Dixon, it's Austin Deculus. That creates a lot of opportunity for Emil Wagner and Rashid Miller, who are coming out of, you know, high-profile situations. Like, Emil Wagner, two-year starter at Notre Dame at right tackle. I mean, that, you know, there's some pedigree there. And then same goes for Rashid Miller, who I want to say was a guard and then made the move to tackle at Louisville. I wonder if they view him as a guard. I'll open that possibility. I don't know enough about how the Titans are viewing him. But for now, we're including him in this swing tackle, you know, competition because they are so bad at that swing tackle position. And they know it. That's why they went out and got two high-profile UDFAs.
Yeah, I think one of these guys makes the roster. Just, again, they, unless they end up bringing in a veteran tackle who's actually a tackle and not a guard or whatever, if they bring in, how many veterans can they possibly bring on the offensive line? Like, if they do end up bringing back Kevin Zeitler, that's probably the only guy. If they do end up bringing in a veteran swing tackle, that's probably the only, and I don't think, I mean, maybe they would, but I don't think they would sign Zeitler and a veteran swing tackle. So I think these guys are, like, one of these two guys, whoever proves himself to be a better NFL caliber player, is going to end up making the roster. And, you know, we talked about how Rashid Miller handled Reuben Bain. Emil Wagner did not handle Reuben Bain. I don't think that's very indicative of their NFL career projection. But one of these guys, I think, like, if you're making a list of most likely players to make the roster, I don't know which one is more likely, but one of them is very likely.
I hope this is actually Austin Deculus in the chat. Austin Deculus 69 says, booyah. Austin, I heard you're a good run blocker. I really did. I heard you're a really good run blocker if it's you. So surprise us at camp. We'll definitely be tracking your progress. Someone asked here, what about Scott Steiner's son, the wide receiver out of Jacksonville State? It's Brock Rechsteiner. And as Atlas pointed out, he was one of the initial reports that is not on the initial Titans UDFA list. So we don't know what's going on with Brock Rechsteiner. Is it just a hang up in the contract? Is it a physical, you know, passing a physical thing? We don't know. I'd love to know if he's actually there. I'm sure we'll find out if he was actually there at minicamp or not. The other reported UDFA signing that's not on the list is cornerback Trenton Allen Yeo. And I'm going to use that opportunity to transition us to cornerbacks.
Yeah, and there was also the Florida State quarterback coming in as a wide receiver. I believe he is there as on a tryout basis.
That was always reported as a tryout. So that's not what I'm saying.
Well, he's not on the list, but he's there, I believe, as a tryout.
But they didn't release the list of minicamp invites, I don't think.
I know.
So
I'm
why
saying
would he
he's
be
not
on
a,
the list?
That's what I'm saying. He's not a signed undrafted free agent. We talked about him on Wednesday's show as somebody that was going to be a UDFA potentially. And yeah, I get what you're saying. He's reported as a mini camp tryout. I was just pointing out he's a tryout player. I'm just pointing out there are other guys that are tryout players.
There are a ton of guys there who are there on a tryout basis. Mini, there's so many of them.
And that this is why guys like Brock Rechsteiner is why we waited till today to talk about the UDFAs, because there are guys that are reported as UDFAs who are just tryout players. And there are guys who aren't reported who end up on the list. So that's what we're doing today, is talking through this. And you wanted to transition us to corner, so I think that is where we should go next, because as we just talked through, there's three guys. There's a guy that could play nickel, and there are a couple of guys that look like boundary corners.
So, by the way, Easton just tweeted out the list of tryouts. It's insanely long. It's crazy long. Wow. And I will say that both those guys are on this list of tryouts, so they might have just been misreported as UDFAs. Brock Rechsteiner and Trenton Allen-Yo are on the list of tryouts. So that's obviously where this went wrong. I'm not going to read out the whole list because it's literally like, I don't know, is there 30, 40 names on this list? It's crazy. I interviewed Kobe Baines, the guard out of Kansas, that he's one of the names on this list. I didn't know that he was here. And I'm going to get mad at his agent for not telling me that he was here because I interviewed him.
Here's the list in a size that's readable since it was so tiny. It is long. And you know what? This is what they do so that they can actually run a real practice. You know, I mean, you can't get like nine guys on the field, or what, 20, 11 undrafted free agents plus eight draft picks is 19 players plus a whatever tryout. Like, you can't put 20 guys on the field and say, let's run a football practice. Like, so there are a lot of guys on this list because they need bodies to be able to even run a real practice or a pair of practices. So this is a pretty long list.
And I was going
to
say, like, they didn't draft a quarterback, so they needed a quarterback, right? Like,
here's Brock Rechsteiner. He is on the tryout list.
And so is Trenton Allen-Yo, the other corner. You just passed him a few, like he's a little below, a few names below. He's the other guy that was listed as a signing, where he's clearly just a tryout. DJ James from Auburn. Wasn't there a corner at Auburn named DJ James that got drafted a year or two ago? I wonder if that's a veteran tryout.
Interesting. They do sometimes bring those guys in. Guys who have, you know, not stuck on in the league or whatever.
I reported a couple of these guys that were going to be here. I'm glad, like Key Lawrence, I reported was a tryout. I think I reported on Philip Dunham as well. So a couple of interesting names here.
Roydell Williams, running back, familiar name.
Kobe Baines is on the list, Bill. Yes, there is Kobe Baines. The guard from Kansas is on this list right there.
So that quarterback wide receiver from Florida State is not on the list. So I don't know what that was.
Oh, yeah, interesting. Tommy Castanellos, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's not here. Anyway, we can get back to the conversation.
Yeah, enough time.
We're going to
transition to the corners, because we talked about Bishop Fitzgerald. We talked about the tackles. Well, we think there's a lot of opportunity in this cornerback room as well. And the Titans have signed three, as you mentioned, in Jaden Lucas out of Clemson, McCutcheon out of Houston, and also the Tennessee guy, Jalen McMurray from Tennessee. I'm going to break these up into two separate tiers, if you will. Just like the Titans are breaking up boundary corners and nickel corners. Jaden Lucas and Latrell McCutcheon are big-bodied perimeter guys. When Robert Saleh says, we've got a lot of competition for those 3, 4, 5 spots, I think he's adding Jaden Lucas and Latrell McCutcheon to that list. They are true boundary perimeter corners, competing with, say, a Josh Williams there for the number three, competing with maybe Micah Robinson if you view him as a boundary corner. I really like Latrell McCutcheon out of Houston. 51 tackles last year, 9 pass breakups. When Robert Saleh says we're interested in, or we're excited about some of these UDFA corners, I'm going to guess he's talking about Latrell McCutcheon, because that was the one that I was pumped about. Jalen McMurray out of Tennessee is an undersized nickel only. That's why I put him in a different tier. But he's fun on tape, man. Super energetic, creates plays, comes downhill. You can tell he's one of those smaller nickels who plays with a chip on his shoulder. And it's Marcus Harrison who at nickel corner. We don't know. So I think there's opportunity there too. Again, Michael Robinson, curious to see where he works this offseason, because I think he's got some inside outside to his game. But I think all three of these UDFA corners have a legitimate shot to compete for 53-man roster spots at different positions, boundary and nickel. Not surprised. We're concerned about the corner depth, you and I. And Ricky, like you said, don't sleep on McMurray. He's a dude out there. He was a dude for that Vols defense this past year. He was so much fun. So really excited about all three of those UDFA corners. And I really am curious. I think they're going to get in the mix there.
Interesting to see Xavier Restrepo at the rookie minicamp, as has been reported, I guess.
Has that been reported? I didn't know.
Multiple people are saying it in the chat. I don't know if it's been reported, but it's interesting. You know what? Let me just confirm if this is happening. It's
like a Rion. Hop to Easton's because, Twitter or something.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if he is there, that's not a great sign for where he's
Would he
at.
Even be allowed to be there, though? He's a player who's under contract, like no one else.
I don't know. I mean, sometimes they bring young second-year guys out to rookie minicamp, but I don't know. I don't see it anywhere. I don't know where you guys are seeing that. So, PK tweeted it, I guess? I mean, if PK says it, it's true. PK doesn't say things that aren't true. There are 5 veterans participating in rookie minicamp. Here we go, wow. Justin. Yeah.
And he's one of them. Not a great sign. Now, those other guys are like them. A who's who list of who?
Yeah, so Kedrain Callaghan, who we talked about on Wednesday, is basically the backup nickel right now. David Abuka-Agoha, who is, you know, a roster exemption international player. Hal Presley, Joel Wilson, and Xavier Restrepo. Interesting. I mean, yeah, it's not a great sign, but it also isn't, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it gives him another chance to go prove himself if you want to look at it from that standpoint. Yeah, on the corners, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know which one has the best chance to make the roster. I'll just say that one of them definitely has a chance to make the roster because, as we just heard Sala say, the depth there is not great and they need bodies. And Jalen McMurray, the fact that he's a nickel, leg up for his chances because the Titans don't, to my knowledge, have a second nickel unless they're comfortable bumping Alante Taylor inside, which maybe they are. But I mean, Marcus Harris sounds like Robert Saul likes Marcus Harris, and he's going to be your starter there. 2 receivers we talked a little bit about. Tyron Montgomery, I think Tyron Montgomery is the most exciting player there because he plays an exciting skill position. He's got a ton of production. He was great at the Senior Bowl. And he plays a position that's fun. Now, he's not necessarily competing at a position that lacks depth anymore. Like, there's that's a lot the of problem. Depth there, actually. And so I would say he has the best chance to make it, but I don't think that's true. I think a tackle, a corner, or Bishop Fitzgerald have the best chance to make it because there's less competition at the back end of those spots. That said, if Tyron Montgomery can prove himself to be a valuable special teams contributor as a rookie, he's got a shot to make the team. I don't know anything about Hank Beattie except that he played at Illinois, so I'm not going to talk about his chances. But I do think, like I said this on Wednesday, but the guy that Titans fans are going to fall in love with during training camp as like the long shot to make the roster guy that we all like, that we want to see get the ball more, it's Tyron Montgomery. And if he puts together a good preseason and proves that he can play special teams, he's got a shot to unseat Bryce Oliver. But I'll say, the last thing I'll say, he's not unseating Bryce Oliver for what he can do as a receiver.
Right.
Because they need that guy to be a gunner. So he's got to be able to prove that he can be a contributor on special teams.
You've got to play special teams. Hayden, I think he's got this wrong, though. This is not our last episode before the vacation.
It's not.
Yeah, we've got a couple more episodes, Hayden, before the vacation. So you will see us again, hopefully, unless you're taking a vacation from MCA, which would make us very, very sad. This is not the last episode. We've got a couple more episodes before we take a very, very short time off. I'll say this. Excited about Tyron Montgomery. Double down on everything you said. A lot of depth at receiver, so it's going to be hard to actually make it there. That's why you and I are smart, I think wisely listing a tackle, the safety, one of these corners as having a better chance than Montgomery to make the roster. I also don't think the gap between him and Hank Beattie, like we're all excited about him. I've heard really good things from people I spoke to about Hank Beattie. Like he had a really nice season at Illinois, and he's outstanding on special teams as well. So it's too bad we have, like someone said, it's too bad we've got such a good returner in DK because Beattie might make waves as a returner, which might get minimized here in Tennessee. But Hank Beattie's a good player. I think we're going to be surprised by him when we actually find out more about him.
That's fair, and we'll keep an eye on him and what the reports have to say. But 3 other guys we didn't really talk about yet. I mean, I mentioned him, but we didn't talk about him. Shad Banks, the UTSA linebacker. Sean Brown, the NC State linebacker, and Manny Powell, the Purdue linebacker. I think this position's kind of like receiver in the sense that they've got 5 guys they must feel pretty good about. Now, I will point out, as our chat pointed out, that Sala talked through the linebacker competition multiple times in that presser and named a bunch of guys and did not name James Williams. Mm-hmm. So you and I like James Williams. I thought James Williams was a good player since they took him in the 7th round, a safety convert down to linebacker who's played well in opportunities when he gets them, played well in week 18 last year. I don't know if Robert Saleh just had a, you know, blank, you know, memory moment, right, or if he doesn't think that James Williams is much of anything. But I will say, these three linebackers, I mean, two of them were uber productive. The Purdue kid, extremely productive. 12 tackles for loss last season. Like, that's real production. I don't know, like, we didn't break down the tape, right? So I'm literally just looking at a box score, and I'll be honest with you guys and say that. But it's another position that I think is just going to be tough to crack. Got to prove that you can play special teams. They draft somebody there in the second round who they trade up for. They sign Mo Diabate from Cleveland. Sala shouts him out in the press conference. They obviously like what he can do on special teams. So it's going to be tough to unseat somebody in that room. But these three guys, they are impressive, you know, candidates on paper to do so.
Might be a stupid thing for me to say. Maybe it's a hot take, but I truly believe it. I think one of these guys has a better shot to unseat someone like James Williams than one of the receivers has to unseat Bryce Oliver, just because of how good of a gunner Bryce Oliver is on. And James Williams is a good special teams player too, so maybe that's not fair for me to say. But I'm going on a hunch here. I don't know that James Williams being a Rand Carthon pick, you know, he did a... I don't know that he's a Mike Borgonzi guy through and through. I'll leave it at that. I don't know that Mike Borgonzi loves James Williams. And I'm not just saying it because he's a Rand Carthon guy. I think I got a little more insight there than I'm willing to say. But I've got a question there if he's truly, truly a Mike Borgonzi guy. So I think there's more opportunity here at linebacker than there is at wide receiver.
Maybe slightly, but not much. Justin, we're going to take our second break, our last break here. We're going to come back with a few other final thoughts, hit some live chat stuff. We got something to review that we did way before the draft that we got to revisit and put a bow on and tie up a loose end that we'll do after the break. But first, Justin, I just want to say, it is not great for Xavier Restrepo's chances that he's sitting here in the live stream commenting on our video right now while he's supposed to be out at practice. So, Xavier, if you really want to make the team, like, get off the stream. I would never tell anyone.
Run a route, man. What's going on?
I would never tell anyone to hop off the stream, but I'll tell it to this person impersonating Xavier Restrepo, who says, just give me a chance. Okay, second break here. We'll be right back. And a welcome back, audio audience. Justin, we're going to hit some other mini camp notes here because we talked a lot about the UDFAs. We haven't talked really what we're looking for from the actual draft picks at this mini camp. And I'll just say, like, there's not a lot to say, especially after hearing from Sala that they're going to be slow playing these guys and not, you know, not throwing them to the wolves and putting a whole bunch of exertion on their bodies right away after they've been training for, like, speed and agility performance versus training for actual football. But I think a few things will be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see where the offensive linemen line up when they do, you know, if they, I don't know what exactly they're going to do drill-wise. They can't put the pads on, so they're not going to be hitting with pads. Are they going to line up five guys on an offensive line across and try to run some, like, you know, install some basic offensive concepts? And if they do that, where's Pat Coogan and where's Fernando Carmona? Are they at the positions that they played in college that we expect them to potentially compete at with the Titans? Is Pat Coogan at center? Is Carmona at guard? We heard them say they think Coogan has some guard center flexibility. So do they just throw him into the right guard competition right away? Or do they let him compete at center? I'll be interested to see that. I don't know how much info we'll get from that standpoint this weekend, or if that's sort of like a, they're all together for mandatory mini camp in the beginning of June, and then we find out where these guys are lining up. But something to track if the reports are out there.
Yeah, I hope we hear at least something about what, you know, but he did say, I mean, these guys aren't practicing, right? Like, draft picks are strictly strength and conditioning, but hopefully we'll get some insight into, you know, where they view Carmona and Coogan primarily working.
Jordan, I know you've been here the whole time, and I appreciate the question. Who is this year's offseason Kyle Phillips, Racy McMath? I think we've said it a few times. It's Tyron Montgomery.
Gotta be Tyron. This fan base is going to fall in love with Tyron Montgomery.
No doubt about it. Another thing that's something to keep in mind here is, like, as Robert Saleh pointed out, again, this is the player's introduction to NFL practices.
Right.
NFL practices are restricted in terms of how much time they can spend on the field with the coaches and the players actually getting work in. And the best coaches in the NFL, and I don't know if Robert Saleh falls into that category yet, but Coaches who understand that this is a limited amount of time and we need to be extremely efficient with the work we do on the field. I will say Mike Vrabel was really good at this. At this aspect of managing everything as the head coach, is making sure that that time spent on the field is maximized. So this is an introduction to that for these rookie players who maybe didn't necessarily deal with the same restrictions in college, is that like when they hit the field, it's go, 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 go for 90 minutes, like no stopping. You know, obviously there's like water breaks and rest and stuff, but it's like we got to maximize our time and do everything as efficiently as we can. And this is their introduction to what that kind of lifestyle is like, what practicing at an NFL level is like. So it's cool for them to have this experience before they join the veterans next week. I don't know if we're going to learn a lot about them from that, but I think that's sort of the thing to point out here, is that that's what this weekend is all about. It's about getting these guys acclimated. Obviously, there's tryout players, there's UDFAs who need to make an impression, but nobody's fate beyond the tryout players is really determined by how they perform this weekend. This weekend is more about, like, let's get these guys used to the NFL level. And for the tryout guys, again, most of them are there just so they can run a full practice with full bodies. Somebody might stand out as being worth, like, let's keep this guy around for at least the spring and see if he's got anything. But it's really, like, it's hard to crack the roster as a tryout guy in this setting, because there's so many guys, there's so little time. It's a really tough situation to be in for those guys.
One or two of these guys might make it onto the 90-man roster, you know, this weekend, next week. And if they do, super impressive. You know, they'll deserve the flowers that we will give them, because like you said, this is a tough environment, tough situation to be in.
Carnell Tate, it'll be cool to see the Titans social media teams posting him make catches. I mean, I'm not expecting to see a lot. I don't know if he's going to get the chance to do one-on-ones against, what, a UDFA cornerback. If he does, he should abuse them with his route running prowess. So that'll be cool. Keldrick Falk, like, again, the pads don't come on, so I don't think we're going to see anything fun from Keldrick Falk. Same with Nick Singleton. I mentioned the O-linemen, but we're not going to get to really know anything about what they can actually bring to this team, if anything, from this rookie mini camp. So Anthony Hill, kind of the same thing. Like, maybe we'll see him running around in space or something, but like, ultimately, we're not going to get to see a lot. It's sort of our first little morsel of, like, football season's not that far away. Here's rookie minicamp. So that's, I guess, what to watch for. To be totally honest with you guys, like, there's not a lot to watch for in rookie minicamp outside of, like, getting your social media feed flooded with fun clips. Like, that's the main thing that we're going to get out of this. So, Justin, if you have any other thoughts on rookie minicamp, get them out now. Otherwise, we'll turn our attention to the live chat and revisit the thing we need to tie up.
Yeah, I think we're good on rookie minicamp, so we can get to the tie-up. And then Chucky keeps reminding us about the Brawl Pod lore. We will answer that question for sure, Chucky. Don't worry about it.
Yes. Yes, we will. You paid money to get that question answered. We will not let you down. Let's start then, I guess, by revisiting this thing that we've been teasing now. I've been talking about for a bit. And what does it mean? What am I talking about? Well, of course. What? Sorry. Not sure what happened here. Give me one. Oh, this is when my audio was not working right, and I had to refresh. So I lost the ability to smoothly transition this like a pro, and instead I look sloppy on the live stream. There we go, Justin. This is, if you'll remember, the betting list, the list of bets that we took on this Titans draft pick, number 4 overall pick. You and I placed bets. Our live chat audience placed bets. I don't know if you guys can read your own name in that right-hand column of audience bets, because it is pretty small. I will say not everyone that submitted a bet after the conclusion of the episode is listed on this chart. I did get you down, though. So if you don't see your name here, don't panic. Well, when I switch spreadsheets in a second, you'll see what I'm talking about. But Justin, I just wanted to point out that you didn't bet any money on Carnell Tate to be the pick. $0.
How much did you bet money?
I sprinkled $50 on it, baby. That means I beat your ass. Let's go. We're making
plus
money.
Plus 900, eh? Wow.
9-1 on Carnell Tate to be the pick. So, okay, let me flip over. This is the final results. This is everybody who placed a bet, whether on the live stream or after the fact in the comments. Yes, including, was it Patrick who was commenting multiple times? Like, don't forget my bet. I got you, Patrick, right here. And basically this chart, it's kind of small, huh? So let me zoom in. This chart shows you like how much total bet each person made. A lot of people stuck to the $1,000 budget that we used, Justin, but a few people threw out other, you know, smaller random amounts. Again, for anyone who missed this episode, this is fake money. This is a fun game. It is not, we did not actually bet $1,000 on who the Titans would pick fourth overall. It's just a fun little game here. But we can see here, Justin, based on what you bet and how much you bet, each outcome, how much money you would be paid out, right? So a lot of red on this sheet. Most of us are losing money on any outcome. A lot of green, though. Jeremiah Love, the most green. A lot of people threw money on Jeremiah Love. Of course, that he was not the pick. So let's scroll over and just recap how everybody did who bet on Carnell Tate, especially if I know you're in the stream right now, we'll shout you out. Like, shout out to an angry fetus who made out like a bandit with a $4,000 win here for betting, what, three? How much did he bet? I don't even remember, whatever. But betting on Carnell Tate to be the pick. We got to give you your flowers, Angry Fetus. Called this one.
Man, jeez.
Cleaned us out here if we're the house, Justin. Shout out to Curtis 077 who made out with $2,000+ here. Sir Kendall the Yapper covered himself. Nice little hedge. In my opinion, if you break even at the casino, that's a win. So shout out to you. I saw you in the chat earlier today as well. Brad Helm made out with $500. Grammit 98, a $1,500 winner. And a Jake Eslandogu also made out with a break-even $0 win. But Justin, you know who the real winners are? Us. We are the house. We made 19 grand on these suckers for Carnell Tate being the pick.
Don't say that to Gary Soto. He's going to stop leaving super chat tips if he knows how much we made on these bets, on these fake money bets.
Yeah, I think the one that really matters is the fact that I only lost $500 and you lost all $1,000 of your dollars. So I beat you. That's what I only really care about. You put too much on Ruben Bain, David Bailey. Neither of us bet on Arvell Reese. I did throw a tiny little sprinkle, $50 sprinkle on Carnell Tate, and it gave me the victory in this little stupid
Jordan says he's a happy fetus now. He's no longer an angry fetus. That's so good. Brawl Pod Lore?
Brawl Pod Lore. Where do you even want to start with this? I mean,
I'm not going to spend much time on it. Chucky, when Graver and I decided we wanted to try to start a podcast together many years ago, didn't know what we were doing. This like wannabe barstool company, I'm going to call it in all honesty, that was a startup named the Brawl
wannabe,
Pod.
Wannabe Locked On-ish too, I feel like.
Yeah, true. Like wannabe barstool, wannabe locked on, called the Brawl Pod Network. They reached out to us about doing their Titans pod, and Graver and I on. They reached out to me. They reached out to me. Graver's like, don't associate me with that. They reached out to me about wanting to do a Titans podcast, and I messaged Graver like, hey, do you want to do a podcast together? And in all honesty, like, we were just pumped about starting one together and pumped about trying to, you know, get into this space that we didn't really care about. Who was giving us the opportunity, in all honesty. We were just like, it's an excuse for us to pod together. In hindsight, like, in truth, we probably should have put more thought into the, like, strategic, you know, the strategy behind it. But I don't really have any regrets, because you and I were just like, let's try this thing and see what happens. And we noticed we had really good chemistry together. We were really good at doing it together. That when we noticed we should not be with this stupid network thing, we left them and started this pod together under the Broadway Sports umbrella. And the rest is history. Here we are. We're over 500 shows now together. Is it 500 together or just 500 on MCA?
No, this is our 587th audio podcast episode of the Music City Audible, which means that there are more than that if you count the, like, we've had some YouTube. I never even posted our Saturday draft stuff as an audio pod because I was just, or maybe it was Friday. One of the days that we did this past week, I didn't even end up posting. I think it was Saturdays because it was just like I was too busy, too hectic with Heed the Call. And then it was like, whatever, we're talking about a day that's about to be underway without recapping rounds 4 through 7. So it just lives as a YouTube pod. Anyway, there's like probably closer to 600 MCA episodes. And that's in addition to what, like 50 or 60 Brawl episodes. We've been podding together for a long time, many, many times.
Which is even crazier that the answer to Jordan's question is no. Graver and I have not met in person, which is pretty wild to think about, and we can't wait to do it someday. We are definitely planning on getting that done. Maybe it'll be a trip to Nashville where we do a live edition of MCA. Maybe we'll line that up. Maybe I'll go to Texas. Maybe he'll come here to Toronto. We'll figure it out, but isn't that crazy? And yes, we will hug when we do meet. Graver's quite a bit taller than me, so I'm going to be at like an awkward intersection, I think. He's going to look like – we're going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito in Twins, probably. This is a really sad question for us to answer. Atlas, do we – I guess I'm an honest person. Do we just say it, Graver?
Yeah, let him know.
Graver did invite me to the wedding, Atlas with three legs. He did invite me to the wedding. Unfortunately, I'm not able to make it. It's going to probably make me look like the bad guy.
No.
With all the stuff going on in the world, it was, you know, a little tricky to travel right now from Canada to the U.S.
It was
outrageously expensive, I guess, because of the war. I'm going to assume because of the cost of fuel, all kinds of reasons that made it really tough for us to align up this time. I know I really, really wanted to go. I booked the hotel in Texas. Let's see if the marriage works out before we regret not going, says JP. That's an outrageous thing to say. I booked the hotel in Texas. I was really, really planning to make it, and it just really kind of sucked.
I mailed an invitation to Canada to Justin to come to the wedding, a real one, save the date first. And then, if you know, months later, an actual invitation, and Justin tried to make it work. Like he said, he booked a hotel and everything, but it's all good. I wish you could be there. I'm not stressing that you won't be there. It would have been fun, obviously, and I would have loved to have you there, but I totally understand the circumstances that prevent you from coming. Atlas throws out, remember, we are begging for listeners. It's all we do. Yeah, there was a old version of this podcast where in the intro, was that the Brawl podcast?
In the intro of it,
because it was like I used some like Tekken, like fight, like voiceover stuff, because it was the Brawl, right? And sound clips of you and me, like Earthquake in the middle of the podcast, unbelievable. That was what you said. I said, we're begging for listeners. It's all we do. Shout out to Atlas for being a true day one and an honorable army general, a lower ranking than Gary Soto and Spizzle, just, you know, financially speaking, but definitely a high ranking general in the audible army there, Atlas. I'll throw out some other Brawl lore just for the heck of it, because I don't care, and screw those guys, because they were not good people. The company folded because these guys got into, like, I actually don't remember the specifics, but there was some, like, insane... I don't want to falsely speculate or misremember and like say somebody did something they didn't do, but there was like some super unprofessional, like hiring people and then never paying them, getting into DMs and like just going extremely aggressive, like profanity, insulting direct messages sent from these guys to other people. Justin said, we didn't know anything about this company when we joined them. We were just like, cool, like somebody's gonna, like, we don't have to pay a Megaphone subscription to get a podcast out there. We can just start a podcast. Great. Like, we don't have to pay any money and we can have our own thing. It'll be fun. Let's do it. And the guys that started this company turned out to be like,
allegedly.
This is no, shade on anybody's age or ageism or anything like that. But I do think, you know, like if you're going to start a company and run it successfully, it helps to have a little more life experience. These guys are like 20 years old. They had no idea what they were doing. And they acted like immature children, especially the way I'm pretty sure the thing was they would like hire people, promise to pay them money. They'd go months without paying anybody. And they didn't. And then people would like be like, why? Where's the money? Okay, I'm quitting. And they would get into fights in people's Twitter DMs and just like unload on them with these insane, like psychotic rants. And we started getting word of this stuff happening. And we were like, let's disassociate from the Brawl. And that happened to coincide pretty perfectly with the launch of Broadway Sports Media. We launched Music City Audible as one of the flagship podcasts of Broadway Sports Media. And here we are today, 587 episodes later. You know,
Gary walking Graver down the aisle right now. Gary Soto walking Graver down the aisle.
the best man is actually going to be my father. My dad is my best man in the wedding, which I think is super cute. My dad's been my best friend since I was a child. He was at my 21st birthday party, buying shots for the whole bar, getting, actually had a great story on my 21st birthday. Lived in Austin, went to University of Texas. So down in Austin on my 21st birthday, my dad comes down to celebrate with us, takes us to Cain and Abel's. If anyone knows Austin, you know Cain and Abel's, where we drank for the entire day, went back to my apartment, took a quick nap, headed downtown to 6th Street, where we were going to celebrate our birthday, back before 6th Street turned into the crap hole that it is now, when it was the place to go party as a college student. We tried to go to the Trophy Room, which was one of our favorite bars. Now, I had a fake ID. Ooh, I shouldn't say this out loud, but...
That's fine.
I had ways to get into... two of these bars when I was underage, and you know, I was in a fraternity and stuff, so I had people and connections and stuff. But on my 21st birthday, we go to Trophy Room, which was one of our favorite bars. It had like a mechanical bull you could ride and stuff. We go up to the bouncer. I'm with my father on my 21st birthday. Hand him my ID, my real ID. Bouncer looks at it for half a second, gives it back to me. He's like, come on, man, this isn't real. I'm like, are you serious, dude? He's like, get out of here with this fake stuff. I'm like, look at the date on the birthday of that ID that you just didn't even look at. Look, I'm standing here with a real adult man in his 50s. Like, hello, you think I'm trying to fake you out to get in? It's my birth. It's my 21st birthday and my dad's here. You think this isn't real? Are you kidding me? So they let us into the bar. They gave us free drinks for the trouble. And yeah, so my dad's going to be my best man and I'm really excited about it.
Jay Graber's a heck of a man, and I'm pumped for you. And people, try to find him, folks. Easter egg hunt. Jay Graber, under a different username, comments on almost every episode of MCA. He's a true supporter.
He does, and maybe you guys can spot him if you scroll through the comments on some of the videos. He comments on all Heed the Call videos as well. He's one of my biggest supporters and truly, you know, one of my best friends in the world. So, and yes, he was a real adult man at the time. Look, when you're 21 years old, you know what's funny, Justin, is like now in our 30s, you know, we still get together for Thanksgiving and family holidays and birthdays and all that stuff. And like, we still have like the kids table and the adults table. And it's like, we look around and like some of my cousins are starting to have kids. And it's like, guys, we can't call our table, I say to my cousins, we can't call our table the kids table anymore. There are actual kids here. We are not kids. We are adult people. Like,
you will and we continue can't call... to be the kids, I imagine, at the table at Thanksgiving because the adults have been there the whole time and they're
well,
the
we can't
adults.
Call them the adults either. It's like just because they're old, they're the adults. Like, but no, we are also the adults. Like, we're all adults.
Which table does Gary Soto sit at? That's the real question.
He's the head of the table, Justin. He is the mafioso boss of our table.
Graber has kicked his dad off the head of the table. Be like, get out of here, dad. Gary Soto's done more for me than you have.
All right. This is devolving into just nonsensical madness here. We appreciate the Audible Army for tuning in. I don't know if we'll listen to a press conference again live. What did you think of that experience, Justin? I mean, ultimately, it was kind of fun to do it, but it was also like I got bored, and then I was like trying to be like, should we be adding something to this by like talking, but I don't want to talk over it. And then we can't hear what they're saying. But I also feel like, why are we doing this at a certain point? I felt that way. I was like, should I cut this off? I don't know. It was a fun experiment. What did you guys think? Let us know in the live chat. Let us know in the comments though, after this video ends, the best thing you can do to help this show is to leave a comment, subscribe to the channel, like the video, share it with a friend. You know, Canadian Titan, shout out to Canadian Titan, who goes out on Twitter and posts, what is your favorite Titans podcast? And then replies to himself and says, the correct answer is the Music City Audible. Shout out to anybody in this stream right now who also replied to that post by shouting us out. There's a lot of great Titans podcasts. So it's an honor and it's humbling and it's a privilege to be mentioned as anybody's favorite Titans podcast. We really appreciate that. I'll just say, better than like sending the link to one friend or sharing it in some other way. Just going out on your own and posting the Music City Audible is the best Titans podcast. Everybody should be listening to it. That kind of word of mouth sharing of the show is really the best way you can help us grow this pod and reach new listeners. So shout out Canadian Titan and shout out to anyone else willing to do that for us. Final word to you, Justin.
This was a lot of fun. I had a blast on today's episode. Really, really enjoyed. So excited for Graber that his wedding is coming up. Really, really pumped. The chat today, you guys were unbelievable. I mean, the comments, the support. The Audible Army really is the best Titans community around. thank you so much. We really, it's tough to put into words how much we appreciate you all.
Oh my goodness gracious. I don't think we ever hit this one from Dalen.
We didn't. You're right.
Dalen says, sorry I didn't send a card, Graver, but congrats on the wedding. Hope it's a great day for you and your fiance. You boys enjoy some much needed time off. Thank you so much, Dalen. Dalen, we recognize you in here all the time, in the comments, on Twitter, interacting with us. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you following our work. And we're appreciative of you. So thank you for the super chat. We really do. It means a lot to us. Okay, Justin, now you can have the final word.
That's going to do it for today's episode. We appreciate you guys so much. Until next time, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.